Well, an internal audit of the situation was launched. You're not preparing to go into space, and that all of these timelines, you know, it's all happening at the same time. She sends this from her bed in the hospital when she's already tested positive. And she sends this message saying, I think I've understood that this is the virus of panic and fear.
Folks, welcome to another episode of The Russia Guy. I'm your host, Kevin Rothrock, and you know what this show is. This is the show where I talk to movers, shakers. I talk to journalists, academics, and sometimes some activists. Today I'm talking to a journalist, a fine one, a very fine one. My guest on today's episode is Polina Ivanova, a special correspondent for Reuters based in Moscow, who was kind enough to come on this podcast, this show, to talk about the woman who fell from the sky. A wonderful, albeit very sad, story she wrote last November about Star City, the secretive home of Russia's space program, and about the death of a doctor who found herself caught up in the confusion and panic of the pandemic's early days. Longform.org rightly selected this text as one of the best science long reads of 2020, and I encourage everybody to go read it. You can find a hyperlink included in the description of this podcast episode. You click on it, and it'll take you right to the story. It's available. It's free. If you're too lazy to go read it, or if you want to listen to this interview first, here's a brief summary. It's a story about a woman named Natalia Lebedeva, the leader of Star City's ambulance service, who fell from a hospital window while being treated for a coronavirus. Apparently terrified that she would be prosecuted for possibly causing a local outbreak, Lebedeva likely killed herself, sources told her friends. Polina Ivanova, my guest today, investigated this story and even gained access to Star City itself. Though the town is something of a nesting doll of inner fortresses within inner fortresses, she says. That and more in the interview. Now, here it is. How did you learn about this story? Like, were you tracking Star City? I assume you're aware of Star City before you reported the story, but were you like monitoring it? Or while the pandemic was unfurling, or was it something that you approached after Natalia Lebedeva's death?
It was after her death, and quite a few months after, actually. At the time, I remember coming across the case, so I had been reporting on the pandemic from the start and embroiled in this kind of constant news flow that it produced almost immediately in Russia, and sort of from mid-March onwards, it was, you know, day in, day out, everything. And it was just one of the kind of short news stories that came up during that time. And I remember sort of filing it somewhere in a notebook as something that I want to come back to when possible. And then when the kind of heat of the moment died down, the first wave of the pandemic and the news cycle around it died down a little bit towards the summer, I then returned to the Lebedeva story. And I think it must have been, probably 2 months on, I think, and came back to it and started reporting it. I had obviously heard of Star City, but only in a sort of, you know, as part of Russia's history, rather than in knowing much about it or much beyond the basics, basically.
And where did you see the story first reported? Before you reported it yourself and you know, researched it and everything, how much, like, what was your understanding of the story before you went and did your own work?
I think it was in one of the, Russian news agencies. You know, we have these, I do a lot of wire shifts for Reuters when I read everything that the news agencies put out. And I think it was on one of those shifts that I remember seeing it, which didn't actually, I think it didn't name her at the time. And then started looking in other sources. And basically there was very limited information about her death. There was a Telegram channel report that said that Lebedeva, who was a doctor, the head of the ambulance service, had died in this particular hospital. But this is, you know, this is a Telegram channel report. The next was an RNTV, like one line in RNTV online, saying that the head of the ambulance service for Star City had died in unexplained circumstances. Her body was found outside the hospital. And then there were a few other similar reports, and you could sort of piece together these different things to kind of get a basic picture of what had actually happened and that this woman had died and where she was from, but no official confirmation of, you know, that would link the, both the manner of her death and her name and her profession and her location. And then there were a few bits of coverage afterwards, especially because it was not an isolated case. So in the beginning of the pandemic, there are a few cases of doctors dying in these, I guess you could call it, murky circumstances. And a lot of outlets sort of put those, the basic bare bones of the information about these different cases together to sort of paint, you know, a sort of picture of a pattern. Not that there necessarily was one, but stuck these three or four cases together. And yeah, it was a few bits of information, which kind of, so I knew the general outline of the story, but little else.
At what point did it kind of come into focus? Like, when did the story as it kind of was completed take shape for you in your head?
I think when I started really looking into Star City and started building a timeline. So what I spent most of the initial reporting process doing before I had really pitched it was constructing both, you know, I had these epic spreadsheets of timelines, a timeline of the pandemic and every news event that was going on in Russia. And then next to it, a timeline of everything that was going on in Star City, and then linking that all.
You're doing this in like Excel or how, like, I'm very curious about your methodology here.
Not Excel. I actually use these graphs on an app called OneNote. It's a Microsoft app, and it allows you to have like 100 different tabs. It's very convenient. So each tab had its own timeline. And then a timeline for you know, what was going, everything that I could sort of collate from social media, from local press on what was going on in Star City during this time. And then the bare bones of the facts of the case that I knew of what had happened when. And this was, you know, three or four points initially that I could build from official statements or from these kind of either Telegram channels or RenTV or whatever about what had happened to Natalia. And then building and building and building on that, I think at some point the timelines all started to fit together, and I realized that the story of the pandemic hitting this particular clinic was so closely interwoven with what was going on in Star City itself in terms of astronauts preparing to go to space, and that all of these timelines, you know, it's all happening at the same time. And I think when I realized just how much was going on in this small space and how, you know, the pandemic was coming to it at this absolutely crucial moment, I think that's when I realized that there really was something there. But then I think I did the initial pitch to editors about it before really realizing quite how difficult it would then be to report it out, and actually kind of, I wanted to build a really day by day picture of what was going on. And yeah, that was a challenge.
That makes sense that logistically or thematically it was a challenge, because you are piecing together so many different timelines, and you're sussing out a story that, you know, isn't necessarily obvious right at the start. What about like logistically? Because, you know, the report focuses on this closed town. I mean, just like physical access sounds really difficult. So when you're doing a report like this, are there mountains of forms and paperwork you've got to file with government officials? Are there restrictions on where you can go, who you can talk to within Star City? Like, how does it actually work just on the ground?
So I think I started seeing it as like a, you know, the reporting process as basically sort of looking at standing outside a fortress inside a fortress inside a fortress inside a fortress. Because first of all, yes, you have the fact that Star City is a ZATO, a closed administrative territorial unit, and has been for a decade. And before that was a military base. So first of all, you have the actual physical restrictions of entry into the space. And then inside Star City, a lot of the action is taking place in the Gagarin Training Center, which is in itself a walled complex within the walled complex of Star City. And then you have the clinic where officially or unofficially there was a restriction on talking to the press after this event. So there again, it's a walled institution. And then I also wanted to understand a lot about Natalia's, Lebedeva's personal life. And everything that everyone would tell me was that she was a very closed and quite secretive person because of the environment that she was in. She kept everything to herself, didn't have a social media page. So this is sort of, you were facing those, sort of like looking at a lot of walls at once. In terms of paperwork and official permits, not so much actually, because actual physical access to the city is very complicated during the pandemic, even more so. Usually to get into Star City, because of the fact that it's a cosmonaut training center, and because of the type of people who live there, I guess, and also its historic status, to enter it as a foreigner, it takes 42 days of permits to get access, and your permit has to be approved by both the police, both I think the FSB, MVD, local enforcement, and Roscosmos.
What does that mean, 42 days of permits?
So 42 days of application process. So as in you file, this is before the pandemic. I think now it was just completely closed. But this is, for example, if you as a tourist or any, there are sometimes odd tours that are taken around, that you could go around Star City, but you apply and then, you know, your application has to go through all of these different institutions. I think it's slightly fewer institutions, so closer to 2 weeks if you are a Russian citizen. But during the pandemic, Star City closed even more in order to, you know, almost immediately, credit to them, you know, to try and limit access and to try and control the epidemic. So it used to be that permits, you know, can also be provided by a resident of Star City can apply to have someone be given a permit. And if you're Russian, that's about a 2 week long process. But during the pandemic, they decided to limit that to only close family relatives of residents. So even there's no access.
But as a journalist, do you have special access, or are you treated like...
No, not at all. not at all. A lot of the initial reporting I was doing, you know, without accessing the city. So it was all was online, or it was through, and you know, phone calls. But in the end, obviously, I needed to be there. I needed to go. So it was a sort of a roundabout process, but I decided in the end to just invite the mayor for an interview and explain that I was doing a story about the pandemic in Star City, and you know, that I had been doing this reporting for a long time, which I think he was aware of by that point, is a very small place, and invited him for an interview, and the permits were consequently provided by the mayor's office.
So you invited him for an interview and he invited you to the city?
Yeah, very kindly, yes. So access was not straightforward. No,
this story, I mean, what is it actually about to you? Because it, you know, it's the story of a woman dying. You know, that's the kind of the big highlight. But is it, you know, if you were kind of like pitching it to somebody who wanted to know more than that, you know, is it about like a woman struggling against the restrictions of Russian bureaucracy? Is it about panic in a pandemic? Like what's the kind of genre here? Like, what is this, other than it being about a woman's death, a very tragic death? What are the major themes here for you?
Well, I think, you pinpoint them exactly. It's a tragic personal narrative for sure. And one that I hoped would sort of act as a prism to see the rest of, you know, see the general, both the response in Russia, but also universal questions about, you know, responsibility and blame, and within the context of a pandemic and within the context of, you know, doctors fighting a disease that they don't understand and or that is so new, and the, you know, the quintessentially sort of Russian problems that exacerbated that pandemic in Natalia's experience, and in some way an indictment of Russia's response or anyone's. But I think if we're talking about these grander themes, I think, yeah, it would be one in a line that Natalia sends as a text message to her boss, Olga Minina, the head doctor of the clinic, which is that, you know, she sends this from her bed in the hospital when she's already tested positive. And she sends this message saying, I think I've understood that this is the virus of panic and fear. And this was something that, you know, trying to get across that side of the experience that doctors face. You know, we know a lot, and it's very, you know, we know a lot about the shortages of PPE. We know all of the challenges, the exceptionally hard work that doctors have to do, and the long hours of the pandemic. But it was trying to learn about and understand the psychological pressures. And then also, I think another quote that would summarize one of the themes of the story would be when, you know, one of my sources is talking to Lebedeva again when she's already in her hospital bed and a few days before her death, and they're talking on the phone, and Lebedeva is saying, you know, I'm under investigation, they're blaming me, and this person says, how could you have prevented this? How could you have stopped this? What are you, God? You know, and again, so it's this theme of responsibility, and also the culture of buck passing and blame and scapegoating within bureaucratic systems in Russia.
Do you think it's plausible that Lebedeva might have actually been jailed if she hadn't died? Because I know that, you know, apparently one of her last phone calls, as you're just saying, was where she was expressing to a friend or to her boss. Is that right? To her?
This is to a source. Yeah, to one of my sources. To one of my sources, so I can't say.
Sure,
exactly.
Sure. So she's saying that she's genuinely afraid of mm-hmm. going to jail, and it mm-hmm. potentially is one of the reasons that she may have or may not have committed suicide. Do you think is it plausible that she could have gone to jail for whatever she did or didn't do? I mean, is that evidence of like the kind of panic that ensues in?
Well, it's both actually. So yes, it is definitely a case of an example of the kind of panic and this immediate knee-jerk reaction to investigate launch a formal process to make sure that it is, you know, we apportion blame to one person, you know, in a case of a pandemic when it's, you know, especially in its first days when the question of negligence, anyway, it's a separate point, but there was a statement by the FMBA, so that's the Federal Medical and Biological Agency, which is a sort of mini health ministry that supervises the sort of medical facilities that function that serve space or the aerospace sector or the nuclear sector in Russia. So separate from the health ministry, and the FMBA sent a statement, in fact, 10 minutes, I think, before publication of the story, in response to a request for comment that, you know, and after lots of contact with the organization and you know, the whole article is set to publish, and a few minutes before there's this statement which finally confirmed for the first time that an investigation had been launched. You know, it wasn't just sources saying this, it wasn't just people around the town saying this, it was a statement by the FMBA saying, yes, an internal audit audit of the situation was launched and no charges were brought against Lebedeva as a result of the audit, and that they found that they had no issues with her work. But so this thing that, she, you know, was not just something that she had feared in an abstract sense, there was a concrete investigation, and this is something we sort of found out in the reporting.
And there were rumors, presumably. There are rumors, presumably, because people had been getting calls or questioned by.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Yeah. So people had suspected this, but in the conversations that I'd had with people, some people had, I'd heard that, you know, that there had been some sort of investigation, but, you know, there's some bit talk of negligence, or other people had said that they suspected that was the case, or that someone had told someone that's told someone, and then you kind of get closer and closer to people who had had direct contact with her, and then there was this statement by the FMBA confirming that this was the case, but then the FMBA had no issues with her work. When the decision that there were no issues with her work was made, I don't know whether that was before or after her death. But whether or not she could have been jailed, the answer is that there have been criminal cases launched, so who knows? It's a hypothetical, but yeah. But it's a kind of, yeah, universal question about what can and should be done during a pandemic.
That's my interview with Polina Ivanova, a special correspondent for Reuters based in Moscow. You can follow her on Twitter to stay abreast of all her future work and investigations. Please consult the description of this podcast episode to go and do just that. If you enjoyed this interview and like listening to this podcast, I say this at the end of every episode. I don't know if anybody listens to the end. Do you listen to the end of the podcast? You're like, I know it's coming. I'm going to skip it. If anybody out there is listening, I'm going to tell you. Patreon.com/KevinRothrock. Oh, boy. Membership tiers. You send money. You get stickers. You can get a coffee mug. It's fantastic. It has the podcast logo on it. There are people doing this. Some people who do listen, there are probably people out there who listen all the way to the end every time just to experience the disbelief of people give money to this guy. Some people do. And to those out there, thank you. It helps me keep this podcast going. It's not free. There's hosting fees and software fees. You think it's free. It's not. It takes time. So thank you. Thank you very much. As always, thank you for listening as well. Until next time.
Говорят мы пяки-буки, как выносит нас земля. Дайте что ли карты в руки, погадать на короля.